Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Question Reality with Priscilla Leona, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Yeah.
Hello, and welcome to the Question Reality Radio Show. I'm Priscilla Leona, producer and host of this show, and we are coming to you live from Los Angeles, California.
Live.
For 11 years, we've been providing our audience with entertainment industry career advice, and this show is for you. If you are questioning your career reality and thinking about pursuing a career in show business, or if you're already working in the entertainment industry and you're just interested on tips on how to elevate your career. And our guests on this show include Emmy winners, Grammy winners, Tony Award winners, reality TV stars, working professionals, which would be producers, directors, casting directors, talent managers, PR agents. We have script supervisors. My goodness, who else? Publicists. We have stunt people, celebrity makeup artists, and in December we throw in an entertainment attorney, because if you don't have an entertainment attorney, I don't know.
You're not going to make any money.
I know. Exactly. As no money. That's who's going to strip the pocket linings out of the people who give you money. Now, if you missed any of our shows, here are three ways that you can listen to some of our past shows. Number one, go to our archive page on LA Talk Radio website, latalkradio.com, and search for my show title, Question Reality. Number two, iTunes, Google Play Store, Stitcher.com under the podcast section. Number three, free mobile app, which you get at the App Store or the Google Play Store. And I would ask that you please, please, please subscribe to our podcasts, which are on Apple Podcasts. Finally, if you want to be a guest or refer someone to be on my show to promote themselves, their products, or just help listeners with sage career advice, we have got a couple of booking spots left this year. So please go to our official website, questionrealityradioshow.com. Not LA Talk Radio, questionrealityradioshow.com, and that is where we air the show. Oh, actually, LA Talk Radio is where we air the show. Questionrealityradioshow.com is where you go and you click the contact link and submit for consideration. And I don't know about you, but I'm excited. I have been titillated about this guest that we're having on today. And I'm titillated, excited. There's been lots of passion for Mr. Paul Guilfoyle. Thank you. Tacky, but I love this, Paul. It's a little tacky clap, but I love it. I make him play it all the time.
It's called canned applause.
I like the little tacky canned applause. Now, let me tell you a little bit about Mr. Hot Sexy over here. Paul, now I practice Guilfoyle, which I did not know today, is Irish. He is a fellow Irishman.
He's Irish.
Paul is a very well-known actor. Everybody who's looking at him say, oh my gosh, I remember him from, and now you're trying to figure out. Yeah, you know, CSI. He's a very well-known celebrity actor that's been featured in over 70 award-winning films, including Mrs. Doubtfire, Air Force One, Amistad, Spotlight, and the list goes on and on. You're going to have to go to imdb.com and type his name to see the list. Some of the television shows include CSI. That's probably where you remember him. Lieutenant Brass. We loved him.
It's actually Captain.
Yes. CSI Crime Scene Investigation. The Good Fight. One of my favorites. Colony. One of my favorites. And there is a very long list also of Broadway plays. He's had a 45-year career I think he's, I just said, what are you, 49? How'd you do it? 45 years. Paul is also a recipient of 2 Screen Actors Guild Award and a 2016 Robert Altman Award for acting. He's a member of the Actors Studio, which, you know, that is some serious shit up in here, being an Actors Studio member. And currently, Paul is working on the feature film, The Good House. Is that right? The Good Fight, now The Good House?
Yeah, anything with good in it, I'm in it.
Is that a sequel?
I don't think so. But it's with Maya Forbes, who's the producer-writer. She's known for The Larry Sanders Show and one of my favorite animated films, Monsters and Aliens. Oh my gosh, I love that. He's also in a short called Recondition and The Morning Show, an Apple TV series, which I want to know more about because I didn't even know Apple was doing TV series now, but can't know everything, damn it. And the Seville, is that how you pronounce it?
Seville.
In Spain. Communion, The Man from Rome, and that is in pre-production. My gosh, welcome, Paul.
Hey,
Guilfoyle. Yeah, give him another one. Give him another one to pump him up.
Yeah, I'm gonna.
My God.
I'm gonna get the app for that. The canned applause. I can put it on my phone.
You got to just say your name. You're driving. Yeah, say your name and then just hit it.
By the way, Priscilla, I like the name of your show, Question Reality.
You do?
I was having like flashbacks to the 70s thinking about it. Question Reality.
Yeah.
I guess that's a good place to start.
Yeah. Huh? Well, you know, I actually got the name because my husband Albert, he's a software developer by day and then he's a jazz musician on the weekend. So he wrote a song called Question Reality, and it's about what's the first line?
It's about
Paul's gonna love this.
I can't stop wondering about the state of my life.
I'm going to work from
compared
nine to
what?
What he got, it says, say. I go to work from 9 to 5 only to pay the bills and survive. This is what we do instead of hunting.
Wow, you guys could actually interview each other.
That's what I said. If the guest doesn't show up, we're just going to interview
each other. I'm happy to know that.
We're just going to
By day and then
other.
By night, there's like a whole night different identity.
Yeah, we
got Go on, they're totally different.
Right? We got everything.
By day, he's a brain surgeon.
Yes.
By night, he's a stand-up comic.
He's a stand-up comic. I don't know about you, Paul, but it's hot as hell in here, isn't it?
Are you hot? The temperature's rising.
Let me see if I can find the control.
Yeah, turn. I need
you
to hit me with some frost.
It's San Fernando Valley. And, I just came in from Nova Scotia where we're shooting the Good House, and it's not, it's pleasantly,
what's it about?
Pleasantly
can
cold.
You say?
It's based on the novel by Anne Leary.
Okay.
And it stars Sigourney Weaver and Kevin Kline and a bunch of really good actors. And it's written and directed by Maya and her husband, Wally. And they co-direct, and it's unbelievable how well they do that. This is part of probably something that, they're so copacetic and so easily, and their relationship is so strong, and they get along so well, and they hand off duties, and that a team directing, I never felt it being so easily enveloped in a couple, in their whole, that whole dynamic. It's so wonderful. It's almost like having parents in a way. It isn't just one person's vision talking about my movie. It really is, and I'll talk about this later, because these are the fun parts of doing my job, and as you know, and talking to others, it was really the fun part of collaboration.
Yeah.
So you have two directors, they're already collaborating.
Yes.
So that puts collaboration in a whole new place.
And that's very hard to do, being actors together, especially directors together. I mean, field,
it might be hard to do. I mean,
I hear that it is.
But it might be hard to do in concept in your brain, but to watch these two people do it so well, then you'd say, like, it doesn't look hard at all. Maybe more people should do it. If they have this solid relationship where they're able to hand off stuff easily and without rancor and without any kind of, disagreement. Their relationship is so strong. That's what makes it so good. So it's fun working with them. And I'm going back up there on Wednesday to do another scene in the movie at the end of the movie. So
what's it about?
Well, I guess what's it about? I mean, I think everything these days, in my mind, seems to be about what I like to think they're about. So that's how I commit to these movies is, they all seem to have this theme of developing, getting rid of the delusions of yourself, who you think you are, and also embracing the notion that the community can actually be empathetic and healing. if you let it. You know, you tend to come, we all tend to sort of think of our personas and our way we live, and we want to be around certain people, and we have a certain agenda. It may have slightly been made up based upon Madison Avenue, between what the stimulus is, that have, what our parents thought we should become, and we aren't really self-actualizing as much as we think we are. You know, my generation, you know, you mentioned there's a lot of work under the bridge, that, you know, we're always trying to self-actualize, you know? So this is really a story of a woman who has a job and lives in a community and is deluding herself slightly. You know, she's abuses alcohol, but she doesn't think of it that way because this is what's much fun. Yeah, she just thinks, I'm three drinks away from being perfect, kind of thing. And, you know,
I like
and
that.
Yeah, it's great. I think that's actually Ann Leary's line.
I'm going to use that.
Yeah, the book is great. It's novel, Ann Leary, and the script has got just the right touch to it. And Sigourney Weaver plays the part. Yeah.
Wow, I love Sigourney.
Yeah, and she's a really, you know, totally talented, committed, intelligent person. You know, so it's great.
Wow, and so are you? You're in pre-production now. So it's
no, this is actually filming, and it has been filming. I started it off, and I came out of there, and now I'm going back towards the end and do another.
And how do you like Nova Scotia? That's got to be
well,
fun,
you know. See,
I
still play hockey. I mean, I'm always going to bring that up at every interview. You know, in case the Kings are still recruiting. You know, I mean, you know, Luke Robitaille might want to get me on the ice and give me a cup of coffee, see if I can come in and play with the Kings still.
Yeah.
And I do play with the NHL for charity and stuff. So I. You know, so in Nova Scotia, everybody up there talks hockey to me. You know, every driver, every person on the set, everybody. There's famous hockey players from the little town in Nova Scotia where we're filming. You know, Nate MacKinnon and all these great hockey players. Of course, Sidney Crosby's from Nova Scotia, Brad Marchand. And so so it's fun for me to be up in the land of hockey, you know.
Yeah.
I like that. And plus, it's physically just unbelievably beautiful and clean and clear.
Well, you're going to be hitting Toronto, too.
Toronto,
so
yeah.
That's even more
I'm hitting every
hockey.
Place. That yeah, that has a really good exchange rate, yeah, for the producers
and hockey,
of course, yeah. And the Toronto Maple Leafs are unbelievably. Trish Ayala is like head of the Leafs and has been very generous to me to make sure I get into some Leaf games because I,
that's
as a
nice.
Young kid, like 14, I played up in Toronto.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I love the game. So
so you're actually, we were talking about this a little earlier. You're actually from Massachusetts,
Boston.
From Boston.
Yeah, Boston, the real Boston.
But you
yeah.
don't even have, we were talking about accents, and no. I wouldn't even know. You've done a very good job with making your voice kind of Mr. Nowhere USA, which is what they want you to
yeah,
have.
Yeah, you know what?
And
I didn't do it on purpose either. I mean, I left Boston. I mean, I grew up in Boston. It's a little bit rough and tumble, although my dad was an educated guy and very sharp and made sure we were all educated and, you know, was anxious to move us out of there and go into the suburbs. But I love being my grandfather. Everybody has 70 cousins with 70 different last names. And I go back then. I have a lot of colorful memories of growing up there. And a lot of it has to do with sport, really, mm-hmm. not gangsterism and stuff, although that was there. My stuff was more about the openness and the community.
Yeah,
this community was unbelievably strong because everybody in South Boston at the time, you know, this is going back, they call each other cousin because
yeah.
technically you probably are yeah. someone's cousin. And, you know, so you say, hey, cousin. Hey, how you doing, cousin? And so it goes like that all the time. And so it was a good place to kind of have as a reference point. I mean, there is some mendacity in these areas of Boston and areas of Memphis and areas of Louisiana and areas of all over our country where they do leave out and delude themselves on their enlightenment
yeah.
levels. You know what I mean? Or self-actualization levels. I mean, so there's... You know, there's always work to be done in any community, and I think they're getting to it, and I think they're understanding it. They like the fact that everybody now wants to live in South Boston. When I was there, it was kind of a scourge to live there, but now all young people want to
oh,
live
yeah.
there.
Oh, yeah. It's a hotbed
it's
as
a
far
hotbed.
As real estate
Yeah, because
goes.
It's right
yeah.
on the beach. I mean, it's cool to be like a lifeguard in Carson Beach and put some stuff on your nose and have a whistle and an orange
yeah.
bathing suit and call, you know, preferably... You know, beautiful women to come in. You got to get a little bit over your head. You should come in a little bit. You know, blow
so,
your whistle
so they, so they not only have the Wahlbergs. You got Paul.
Yeah, the Wahlbergs. They're from Dorchester. They're lovely. Yeah, Mark Wahlberg. What a fantastic and Donnie too. You know, they've really developed not only as a career but you know entrepreneurs and something that you know because I'm older than they are. But my group didn't really left out of there. career, since you're talking about career paths, we never thought of like branding anything, you know, or like hanging on to something or doing it over till you get it right, or building off of a brand. Mm. You know, the idea what you would do with a product. These guys, you know, did it magnificently well, and also within reason. I mean, there's no. I mean, I'm not putting. I'm saying that that's a good place to do it. I mean, then they get with the brand. Then it comes freedom and it comes control of the project. That's something that I've never been able to experience, but I do it in my little ways. After they call action, before they call cut, I'm in control. Or on stage, you're in control. But these guys have managed to be in control of actually the whole industry and the production and the closest to the pin. No, they're
my
really
God.
Good.
Mark, I mean, now Mark are we
eating? We're actually eating Wahlburgers. Yeah. Wahlburgers. They're going to send some over after that big plug.
Burger.
Yeah, the vegetarian one. Please.
Just so many talented people that came from
Matt
from
and
Massachusetts.
Ben and all the people. Sure, of course, there are some great.
I think Poison was from Boston, weren't they? The group Poison.
I wouldn't know.
Day you're what, and by night you're following Poison around.
Why?
Hair That's band. Like... You're in a hair band.
Yeah, he wishes he came to LA to be in a hair band. That worked out. So let's talk about a recent film that you starred in, Turnover, written by, is it Laurie D. Griffith? I think it's Laurie because there's an asterisk. Okay, Laurie. Sorry if that's not right. And Linda Palmer, who also was the director, in which you played the character Peter. And first, let me read a brief synopsis of the film. So cafe owner Peter, leaves his disgruntled manager, Henry, to take care of business. Henry decides to hire a crew of misfits because he is ticked off at Mr. Peter. And Peter returns to the restaurant from vacation to an unrecognizable business, but soon learns the value of camaraderie with your new team. So your character, Peter, had a lot of things going on in his life that were causing a ton of stress. Before the disgruntled employee did what he did. So when Henry decided to hire the crew of what he felt, or I'm going to put he felt were misfits to get revenge on you, tell us about your character, Peter, and what his journey was like for himself and the realization about himself, because he may not have encountered people like that before they were hired.
Sure. There's a lot what you said in the description. And, you know, sometimes, you know, when you're talking to, as you do often on your show, talk to the people who are sort of the actors, like the craftsmen, like the guys who are going to build it. They have a whole different narrative than the narrative that you described in describing how the movie operates. The mechanism of a movie and the mechanism of building the character are different.
Right.
And so so with Linda, you know, we talked a lot and worked on the script, and I took a lot of time to figure out about committing and came out and read with the cast and then talked with her about how I would develop this character so it would have an arc or a center that would be realistic to me and that I would be able to play, not something that was invented by writing or something that would have these great movements to it, but something that the movement would be different, be smaller. Mm. In other words, I remember even on the TV show, which we'll talk to later, it was people, young writers, who would come up to me then say, like, you know, not Linda didn't do this, but this would happen with on TV. They'd say, like, well, you know, drama is about conflict and big change, you know, from, you know, and I said, well, it is about change, and it is sometimes about conflict, and we'll talk about Tom McCarthy, who really sort of avoids conflicts, but in his movies. But the conflicts and the change are very subtle. They don't have to be big.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't have to go from being like a curmudgeon and a big bad guy and angry and passive-aggressive and aggressive and hateful, and then he turns into someone who is totally realized.
Right.
At an older age, that's almost impossible to do. It's hard to believe that that transition would take place. That's like somebody being hit by a bolt of lightning.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, I stood out and tried in a lightning storm, and I can't get hit by a bolt of lightning. I don't think it happens often. So the subtle change that Linda and I agreed on doing, and we took a lot of time to her her credit. We took a lot of time investigating it, making sure it was in the script, removing stuff that wasn't was going to be too heavy or weighted that would couldn't be turned on. Couldn't, you know, like you couldn't take that turn in a race car around the bend. You'd crash. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to avoid crashes. And I think together in this, what I'll talk to you about later, where you collaborate with someone, we came up with something that that had reality to it. And it was based upon what we talked about earlier about South Boston. You know, South Boston, they have what they call a time. It's a party. It's for the oldest teenager. And usually the guy's about 56, and he has his motorcycle, and he's living with his mother. The motorcycle's inside the house. He's always working on it. And he's out drinking every night and hanging out with, you know, young people. He thinks he's a teenager. He does never stop living like that. And in a way, this is Peter's dilemma. He's not a bad guy. He's just completely, he's living in Long Beach. He runs a little restaurant. He makes crepes. He thinks they're French. You know, he has it all mixed up. He's having fun. He drives a car. He's winking at every girl. He's like thinking everything is going smooth.
Yeah.
What's going on? And then, you know, so he has those problems of self-delusion. So that's where we start from. And then, you know, and he's always making chaotic choices. So some of the people who have like, think that they have a realistic, you know, an actual structured event to take place. And when he can't deliver that, they get pissed off at him.
Yes.
And so they try to, and that's the gamut of the movie. And then Peter, thinking that all his friends have to be hipsters, you know, I mean, after all, he's thinking of himself that way. And when the other friend who, you know, does this gamut in the movie, it sets him up with a bunch of people, which we call misfits. It takes Peter a bit of a while to recognize what's going on. I mean, but he's not, you know, he's trying to figure out what the heck is going on until the realization slowly, as you said in the narrative, happens quickly, but it actually slowly evolves into, because a series of events happen that I won't spoil the movie for you, and see what happens to him after that, to recognize, to reset your community, to reset your identity, you know, not in a big way, but certainly to throw away the illusory life and just, as you say, question reality.
Ooh, I
and
like
then look
that.
At it, look at it in real terms. And this resets and revisits a whole notion of what it is to live among each other, mm-hmm. with empathy and with consciousness. And this was our goal, to try to say this. And in Linda's movies, I've only seen them I haven't even seen this movie. I'm going to see it next week. But, you know, she has a lot of these stories. It's almost in a way like a carnival of characters. There's a tremendous amount of characters. And there's Peter, that I'm talking about, is the owner, and he has this event going on more or less like, if you think of it like a carnival, like a big top. My wife choreographed circus, so I know about this. So there's like a big round, there's the round ring where Peter's event is going on. And then this sort of side events going on the side. So every character that Linda, which I admire her determination, is going to have a beginning, a middle, an end, and an epiphany for every one of the characters that is in there. They're all going to have some sea change in different ways. So this movie sort of doubles down on its theme, maybe quadruples down. I mean, everybody in the movie is having some understanding of what it means to take creative risk. These little tiny things in life that we sort of avoid as we, you know, find our way on the same freeways, going to this job, trying to pay the cable bill and trying to, you know, take care of our health and should go to the gym a little more and all that stuff, mm-hmm. that people do. And time goes by and we kind of in a way divorce ourselves from our real existence, our consciousness. So in a way, that's what we're hoping the movie will speak to.
Well, I feel that the writers, Laurie Griffith and Linda Palmer, who's also the director, I think they were going for a theme of, tell me if you feel this way, a theme of universal need for inclusive and diverse community in all aspects of life and work and family members and friends. And,
well, kind of saying that.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know about universal need. I mean, the need has to, here's what it is. The need has to come from someplace. So you have to see how it arrives.
Yeah.
So you realize that it's either mend, mm-hmm. or die. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. in a lot of cases, in these characters. I mean, you know, you find yourself sometimes at a crossroads. And hopefully you make the right choice.
Yeah. And I have to say that I've been a producer on many of Linda Palmer's films.
Oh, my God. I didn't know that.
I have. Yeah.
Oh, by the way, that check that you gave me.
I gave you a little extra because you're from Boston. I just feel that all of them are just very memorable, heartwarming projects. But this one was probably my favorite because it was not only memorable and it was heartwarming and it was funny. And most importantly, I feel that she incorporated what is called inclusion impact. Disability representation on screen, also behind the screens, me being one of the producers. No plug, but I got my little chair out there. So what are your thoughts on that viewpoint?
You know,
I think she did a good job covering,
sometimes,
the disability.
You know, on a movie, too. The movie's kind of like a little bit this pocket of where it's really a fun thing to do. If you can, all your listeners who are out there wanting to be in it in this business, when you're actually doing the movie, that part, it's so much fun. It can't be, you're very lucky and fortunate. And so most people feel that. And most people, they're at, usually in the creative process, everyone's doing their best to kind of deliver something that sparks, sparks each other, by the way. Not just, nobody's trying to do anything for themselves because it's like an elaborate game of tennis. So you need the, it has to be hit back and you have to hit it to someone, the ball. So, I think that, so that's what, I think that the idea that this, there was this fun set, there were a couple of people who were, I guess, handicapped. They have Down syndrome, I think is what it is. And
deaf. She had a person
there was a deaf person.
They were signing.
They were signing.
I'm in my power chair.
There was, you know, there was people who would say, yes, exactly.
And then the character who got married, oh gosh, I can't.
Jamie Brewer.
Jamie.
And yes,
they
right.
They were, Down syndrome.
Blair Williamson. Yeah, and so these two actors, Blair and Jamie, and the, we were all hanging around. But we as a group, because we were, you know, as you know, being a producer, we were low in budget and we had a very short amount of time. So we were around each other. There weren't like trailers to disappear to. So we were always together.
Yeah.
And we all developed, I shared my place where I changed with Blair and he would be, and you know, we got to be friends with Jamie and Blair and everyone and didn't even see them as like handicapped. All that went away. We were just part of this troupe of players trying to bring this story to life. And I think that's where the movie heads. I mean, I guess I am kind of showing you the ending, and I don't really want to do that because I think it's worth seeing. And
it really
hopefully
is.
It comes, even if you know where it's going, it's how everyone gets there, which I think is kind of the beauty of our other work with everyone.
That led me to my next question. Who, in your opinion, who is going to love this film? Obviously not hardcore horror movie people, who do you think should see this film and why?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, that's a tough one because
I think there's a little bit for everybody except horror.
Well, you know, I mean, I don't
there's
know.
There's comedy,
I would
drama.
See, this is kind of what we're talking about. To remove everybody from some, to all find subsets of what we like and dislike, so that we only, we're horror, but you know, to create an identity as a guy who only goes to horror movies, I only want to watch action movies, the idea of, a movie, it wouldn't hurt anybody to watch this movie however it's going to be delivered to them. I mean, no matter what genre of movie they prefer, I mean, try to step outside yourself, that's kind of the message, and let it kind of, you know, see it for what it is. I mean, there's no big car chases. There's not a lot of groovy exteriors, I mean, because of the limited amount of money. There's not a lot of way to kind of create an environment. There aren't tons and tons. It isn't like The Irishman, you know, where there's everybody's in it and they're all doing their genre. It's totally the opposite of that. So this is all a group of people who really have different ways of working, different ages, group types. And, you know, we managed to kind of find, the common denominator, even while working. And that translates into the picture. It's these subtle things that translate in the picture that aren't just writing, you know, saying the line, acting, direction, lighting, camera work.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of is there. The stuff is that gets, you know, that's kind of like what you build the road on. Then you build the road on top of that, you know, to create so you can go fast or slow or however you like. You know what I mean?
Right.
Those are just the basic points. Those are the structures. They're not the actual home that you mm-hmm. live in. So some people don't know that yet. There's some, a lot of young actors who feel that, no, I just need the structures. I just need, when you stop speaking, then I speak, and then you speak back. And then, no, mm-hmm. you know, just let's sit and talk and open it up. So I tried to create that freedom. Personally, I do that a lot anyway. I try to create relaxation and freedom for everybody to open up so that there's parts of themselves that would inform the character that we could get, you know, a deeper sense of reality in the movie.
Well, I know that people, for all of those reasons, you want to go see this movie because it's got, you know, a comedy, it's got drama, it's just so many heartfelt moments, just a wide variety of things that you want in your movie to take you on a journey for a ride. But one of the things you're going to love if you go and see this movie, which you need to, is Peter, the character, Paul. Do you know what Paul does in this movie? Paul is actually singing in this movie. He is singing and strumming a guitar, which I had never seen you do on any show. And of course, I haven't seen everything you've done, but I've seen a lot. And I've never seen you sing. I didn't know you had that beautiful golden pipe.
Well, I thought, What's going on, Paul? I thought you were a horror movie freak.
Well, but you'd have a beautiful voice.
By day, I'm an actor, but by night, I'm in the hairband poison.
I didn't think you were going to get that. So you're secretly, are you karaokeing it up? Is that where you got, I mean, or do you have formal training?
I think this is a good time to play the canned applause on your phone.
We need the canned applause. We need it. Paul.
Thank you very much.
Paul was singing.
Thank you very much.
Paul was singing.
Thank you, honey.
Now he also does impressions. Is there no end to this man's talent? I don't know. I'm going to whip a G-string out of my purse later, and I'm going to have to hire him.
Come on, honey. Put some butter on it. it's true.
Smash me a banana and some peanut butter. I love it. Slather it on over, baby.
Okay, there you go, Priscilla. Yeah, all right, Memphis.
But do you have a background in singing?
My mother's a singer.
Ah.
My daughter sings.
Because you sing in tune.
Yeah, that's called singing, I think.
I sing, but it's not in tune.
We have one musician here, don't we?
Albert actually says, I try to sing because I love singing. Unfortunately, I'm not very good at it at all. He says I sing in what's called the devil's...
I love brain surgery, but I'm not good at that either, yeah.
He says I sing in the devil's tritone. I don't know what that means.
Well, that was before I was practicing the Frank Gambale exercises, and that got in your head. Then you started singing.
Yeah, and that's before you got married.
That's it, right, exactly.
The devil's tritone. I think I like that as a tune. I think you can play that. We'll get a saxophone on that, and we'll get under it.
Yeah, let's hit it. Was that a song that you wrote?
No. Oh, it's written by a writer that Linda uses, and there was a lot of attention. He's a nice guy, and he wrote it. He wrote it, and it's really quirky. Matter of fact, that's the name of one of them. Yeah, no, it tells you kind of the movie when, you know, when things start to get really sexy, the guy pulls out a guitar and tries to sing.
He plays guitar and bass.
I mean, it's kind of like, really? Is this the time to do it? Are you sure about that?
So I know if I ever want to get you to star in one of my films, I'm going to say, Paul, by the way, we're going to give you a guitar.
Well, as long as it's in tune.
We're going to give you a guitar.
Yeah, no, I had fun. It was, you know, but we did it all very quickly. So it was like, here's a song, learn it, and we're going to do it in 5 minutes. Oh, geez, thanks a lot. You know, anyway, so we had fun. And Linda was very good about it. She put it in, and I'm sure I heard that was really well edited. And by the way, I want to give a shout out to the other actors. I don't know if you can have them on. Like
Riker.
Julia Silverman and Riker Lynch. And,
yeah, have him on
and
next
Jamie
week.
Brewer and Blair Williamson and those. They're great. There's lots of it. And Edna Brown. And
your wife.
And my wife.
What was her name?
Elena Madison.
Was Elena your wife in the movie?
Oh, no. Kat Kramer.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
She was the...
You wish it was Elena Madison.
It was lovely. Kat, we have... But, you know, we were at the... As you can see, that was part of the...
That
he
was
in the delusion
part of his life. Yeah.
The marriage is falling apart from the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
It's just that Peter doesn't know that.
Yeah.
And I think that happens to a lot of people. Like, don't you realize your marriage is falling apart? Just, you know, your wife actually has another boyfriend.
No.
You go like, no way.
No, not happening.
Not
at all.
Yeah.
Now, I wanted to ask you, obviously I'm in this movie. I played the character Mrs. Luigi. So I was Mrs. Luigi, who was very, very obsessed with that little dog. I don't know if you saw the little dog, which made that such a fun role. What character did you feel that you didn't know the person before? I don't think you worked with any of them before, but what character did you walk away from the film going, wow, I learned so much about that particular character? Was it yourself or was it one of the other characters?
Oh, well, you know, that's a tough question. I'm not sure where you're
leading. That's a good question.
It's a very good question. Yeah, it's a tough, good
Thank
question.
Thank you.
Well, that's a good question.
Thank that's you. That's so
no,
much.
That's true. That's true. That's I'm sorry. You're right. That's a good question, Priscilla.
Thank you, Pinta. It sets off so many things in my brain to answer it.
But I'm having...
Because most actors say after they play a character, they have an epiphany. Or they say that they realize something. If it's a good character, they realize something about themselves, either personally or the character.
You know, it's interesting. I kind of try to have these epiphanies before I begin the character, so I can put the epiphanies into the role. That way I'm going to inform it by something that I've already experienced. And then it's truthful.
Yeah.
And truthful on that's the good question. It's really truthful. So that's kind of what I was encouraging Linda to help me with, and she was willing to, you know, collaborate with me to try to make that happen. And this was the epiphany of the realization of getting rid of illusion and finding, resetting a community. And that was, we talked about it a lot.
Yeah.
So Linda and I, before we shot, before we began, because without that, you know, without having a chance, this is why movies at this budget level where, you know, you can't go out and get whatever Bill Hurt to play it. I mean, you know, is that, you know, you have to, you know, you want to make sure that, you know, at least you can say something you've been curious about saying. You know, you want to have some, you know, input into it, and that, you know, is really the driving force. And I really think this idea of resetting our community in general, in the United States certainly, and maybe in the world, because it's all sort of starting to go into the corner and coming out, you know, violently at each other, and it's really kind of it's in chaos. So I think we have to kind of find empathy in community together, and to have hope. You know, I know that sounds cliched, and, you know, but sometimes they're a cliche because they're true.
Yeah. And what was this deciding factor of you accepting the part of Peter? Was there
One of the things was that Linda was open to the idea of, like, discussing it with me in a real way and making changes.
Okay.
And changing the idea of, like, you know, not like something that she might have had in her head was some of it might have been 180 degrees around.
And does that happen a lot with director and actor? It happens a lot.
It's funny you mentioned, and that is a good question. It happens a lot when you're with really, really unbelievably talented people. When you're with, like, Mike Nichols and Sidney Pollack and Sidney Lumet and Neil Jordan. People like that directing, and they're running the show. There's no studio or no ownership. You know, in America, because we're capitalists, we think if we bought it, we own it, and it's going to be mine, and it's my ideas, and it's mine, and it's my film. And people start using the words, my film. Mm-hmm. And those are really good signs that you want to run away.
Yeah.
But these guys I mentioned, and others, Steven Spielberg, and I can go on. The list is long. Wolfgang Peterson, too. They want to just engage you and engage them in a kind of it's like equals. We're like workers, you know, digging the tunnel under the East River. I mean, you know, there's nobody down there but us digging. So why don't we dig in this way and try this? So, and those are the most creative. Those are the things you... So they're at the large level, and they're at the level where we were talking about before, where, you know, if you have a dog, and I think that was part of the audition, wasn't it, if you had the dog? No.
No, she threw it on me.
But I mean, you know, there's like when you're trying to make something really out of nothing as much as you can. I mean, you have a good script, but you're trying to kind of like get as much out of it as you can. You have to get all the juice out of this lemon.
Yeah.
So then collaboration does exist. But in the middle ground, where it is owned by studios and networks and corporate executives, and they've sent guys to look at it, and the writers are always on set, and the directors are only trying to get their next job, and everybody's trying to kind of you know, move and hustle. And by the way, moving and hustle and in these things, they're paying you well and they want you to deliver a kind of a thing that they're used to and that they've seen before. And they don't really not, they'd like to think that you, they're glad that you're overqualified, because usually the people who do these jobs are overqualified in all the roles, the captain brasses of the world. They're all slightly, you know, they're good. They've all have a tremendous amount of work behind them and they can do this, but we all have to work. And you know, you do the best you can, you get everything out you can, but you do it with it, you do it well, efficiently, and but there are a lot of chefs in that, that kitchen. So it's at the high end and it's kind of in the independent feature end. So those are the two places.
Paul, you gotta go see Paul. We are going to wrap up the turnover segment. You got to go see the movie. We have already won 15 awards in film festivals, by the way. So go to turnovermovie.com and check it out. And at turnovermovie.com. And I tell you, just it's not just Mrs. Luigi here. Character telling you go see it and see it for Paul. You got to see this movie because it contains so much. Very, very well done movie, as all Linda Palmer's movies are very well done. And let me tell you, I admire her so much because one of my pet peeves in this town is that so many people, whether it's a writer, producer, or an actor, they just want a credit on IMDb. So what they do is they will start a fundraiser campaign, get other people's money, do the film, shoot it, if they're lucky, and then it just sits on a shelf. And they don't do anything to promote it or market it.
It's funny.
And they just leave it, Paul. They just leave it. But Linda doesn't do that.
The only people who, you know, tune in or go online to IMDb are people who are in the business. I mean, trying to get some brief information. It isn't like a like a place that's
they leave, they get the money, shoot it, and they leave. Trust me.
There's no glamour in it.
And then they and they think, but people want the credit. It's like a resume, you know, they want it and then they don't. But Linda will take her films and she will do everything she can to take it to the end.
Yeah, I mean, you know, well, let's put it this way too. People want to work in this job because, like I said before, when you actually get around to doing it, it's a great kind of, it's a great effort. It feels like you're a vagabond, like you're a gypsy, like you're, you know, you're living life in an altered reality that's kind of fun and alive and seeking the truth. And you feel slightly like a shaman or you're really trying to do your stuff. And so that's why people want to do it.
Well, you have been, not everyone is as fortunate as Mr. Paul here. You have been in so many amazing projects. I'm just going to list a few that we talked about earlier, but ones that I watch, which is what I put out here. CSI, Crime Scene Investigation, you played the wonderful character Jim Brass, who I loved. The Good Fight, Harry Rendell, who I'm voting for. I don't remember. I'm not at the point where it's the end, so he's still on there as far as I'm concerned. Colony, who was the good bad guy, he played Quail. Mrs. Doubtfire, who the heck doesn't remember that? My God, he played the head chef. Air Force One, he was the chief of his staff. Lloyd Shepard, and Amistad. Oh, these are the best movies. And I didn't know, but you do the voiceovers for CSI as well. So the video games.
Right.
The Good House, of course, is coming out. The Seville Recondition. But you have you've played so many characters. I can't imagine that there is a character you haven't played. So my question to you is, in your future, what is a dream character for you? You haven't played. It's got to be someone you haven't played. And you go, I want to play the character of. Is there anyone like a king? Maybe Henry VIII?
Kings are very easy to play. Because
how about a queen?
Once said to everybody, the king. Well, I'm sorry, I don't have the equipment. But the kings were like the rule among actors is you don't play a king. Everyone else plays you're the king.
You're the guy.
So that's a nice idea. No, I mean, Shakespeare and stuff would be great.
What could you do?
No, I mean, there's a couple of plays. There's, you know, maybe an O'Neill play or two, or if people can stand sitting for 2.5 hours. I've had a lot of plays that I've liked to do. And if I probably am realistic, that's probably where I will have, you know, a time, you know, as life goes on. And we know how tough it is, and you're telling people about making a living in it. That's probably where I have the biggest kind of cachet is in the theater in New York. And that would probably be where I would maybe try to dust it off in a Pinter play.
Favorite play? Or,
well, I do like Harold Pinter's plays. You know, The Homecoming. I wouldn't mind doing that one. I do like Betrayal. I'm going to see that next week. I like the O'Neill plays, Long Day's Journey. That would be one I would like to try.
Long Day's Journey. And then
that's a great play.
I used to direct community theater. I mean, nothing big.
Yeah,
but...
A Touch of the Poet is another great O'Neill play. I mean, I love the Ibsen world, too, and the whole Strindberg canon.
What about Grapes of Wrath?
I'm one Wahlberger short of Grapes of Wrath. Interestingly enough, there was a character actor in Grapes of Wrath, Paul Guilfoyle, who was another. There was another actor named Paul.
In the 40s. Yeah, I saw that, and I thought, I wonder if that's your dad.
Well, what happened on the? See, not everybody's really bright, but in the makeup trailer one day when Tab Hunter was on TV, he was saying. They said, "When did you begin acting?" He said, "Well, this is only 2010 or something." And, sitting around, and he said, it was that wonderful New York character actor, Paul Guilfoyle, who got me started as an actor. And everybody in the room looked at me like, and I said, what are you talking about? I mean, I let them all think that, of course. I mean, what do you think? I'm like 125?
Yeah.
I mean, you used to have to start Tab Hunter. I said, yeah, he was difficult to start off, but I got him going, Tab. Yeah, I taught him like method acting.
Yeah, method.
You know what I mean? So,
maybe Stanislavski.
I mean, I couldn't believe that people actually were gullible enough to think that there were, but there is another.
Yeah, I saw that right under you. Yeah. Now, we only have a couple more minutes to go, but we're at the career advice aspect. Of the show. So, what or who made you decide to become an actor? Because you could have been a stripper, you could have been you could have run moonshine.
Sure. I mean, by you day, could have been a... running moonshine. By night, a stripper.
So
playing
funny.
Guitar. Just a guitar.
Just a guitar.
Anyway, when I was a little kid, I used to babysit my three sisters and I kept like a butcher knife, and my dad and mom would go out and stay out late because my mother was a jazz singer. So I would watch on television, they would have PBS, they would have, one day they had The Iceman Cometh, which I promptly was about 9 years old, tried to drink some gin to get in the mood of The Iceman Cometh. And the other one they had, Willie Loman, Death of a Salesman, by Arthur Miller. When I met Arthur Miller, because I couldn't meet O'Neill, The Iceman Cometh, I told him, you're the reason I became an actor, really in a way, because watching those plays, I had never seen a play, I'm in South Boston, I'm sitting with a butcher knife trying to protect my three young sisters. Somebody came in, I'm surprised, some 9-year-old just attacks him with a butcher knife. I thought that was the biggest knife they had. And in my little hand, it looked like an axe. So maybe I should start horror movies anyway. That's a good horror movie idea. So Arthur Miller, that was probably, that really resonated.
And if you can remember, what was your first audition like? Whether it was play, television?
Well, I'll tell you, I'd got an audition with Norman Mailer, and I was still in college, and I was doing something. He came up, and he wanted to see me, and he said to me... he wanted me to do a play that was going to go to Lincoln Center, and he punched me in the stomach because he liked to box, and I learned to box from my grandfather. So I completely got him. I said, "Look, you do that again, I'm not going to knock you out. I'll just knock you out." I mean, I was 19, and then his wife, who was really lovely, came out and said, "Take off this hat." I had some old Panama hat of the day, and I said, "Don't touch my hat." And I walked away, and that was my audition. I got the part.
Wow. Oh my God, that's exciting. Now, we got me in 5 minutes.
All right,
let's see. What's some good questions we have? What's the best technique for memorization?
Well, I think the best technique is get complete relaxation. Understand the roadmap of the emotional through lines. Those are the things that you need, not the words.
Okay, I like that. Many different styles of acting, Stanislavski, method, English mask. How do you know which one is the right one for you? Because it costs money to take these classes. How do you know?
Well, eventually you're going to have to make your own way. You're going to have to build your own method. Even Lee Strasberg taught that. You have to kind of really find it. He didn't teach it. You have to learn it. You have to earn it and learn it. Make it your own. And create a sense of where these sparks and improvisation can come in, where things can go in any direction. Remember, chaos can be your friend. Don't be looking for a result.
I have the worst time memorizing lines. Is there any tips for memorizing lines?
Well, if you're memorizing lines, there's something hanging you up about it. you gotta really be ready to take a risk. Throw away the fear. Throw away all that stuff. Relax. Just see what know what you're doing. You know who you are, what you're doing, what you're going to say. Just the way I'm talking to you.
Yeah, I'm more of like a sitcom comedy. I can't do drama and crime.
You don't know
who
you are. You don't know.
But
you don't know yet.
It's so hard. Yeah.
Fine. Keep stay open to the possibilities. Yeah. That's the point.
I just like to do it.
Come on, Priscilla. Stay open to the possibilities.
How do you now, Paul? You know the world has changed, honey child. Yeah. In as far as successfully marketing and networking yourself to directors and producers. How do you do it without seeming desperate?
Well, because you don't seem desperate. Don't be desperate.
Some people can't help it.
Well, look, you know what? Look, it's just look at the horizon. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like day to day. Things don't work. Yeah. It's just like you're not looking for a result in acting. Don't look for a result in life.
Yeah. And directors and producers and caster can smell desperation a mile away. So just don't be desperate. It's not that bad. Name 3 to 5 characteristic traits it takes to be a successfully working actor.
Well, like I say, I think intelligence.
Patience.
No, intelligence.
Intelligence.
Intelligence. I think these instincts to kind of have, and a fearlessness, you know, to be able to say, look, I have something to say, and, you know, I'm intelligent enough to know what it is, and I'd like to try it. And those are three.
One to three do's and don'ts of being an actor. Like, don't.
Well, don't be late.
Don't be late.
And don't be late.
Don't be late. Number one.
I remember Harrison Ford telling me once, he's never been late. I, of course, said, well, at $250,000 a day, a week, whatever, I wouldn't be late.
Well, I wouldn't be late.
But no, I mean, he's never been late. So yeah. Never late.
Don't be late.
And I never worked with a young actor. He said, you know, I'm on time 65% of the time. I said, dude, Harrison Ford's on time 100% of the time. Don't be late.
What's the most important thing you've learned from one thing, most important thing you learned from a famous director?
Oh, that's...
And who was the famous director?
Well, I think...
You've worked with so many.
Yeah, the great director, one of the great guys, who in generally was like really was so, you know, encompassing in a human way, human and empathetic and honest with you and personal, was Mike Nichols. And, you know, he had an ability to kind of like make you think it was your idea, and then together he would look at you like, it's our idea together. And he's just such a sharing, open guy. He was great. I mean, Neil Jordan, too, in another more intellectual way, and Storm, more Irish, and I relate to that. That was great. You know, Spielberg, all these guys have
something. Did you work with Spielberg?
On Amistad. But Steven Spielberg would always look to, while you're doing interesting stuff, even he'd let you go, and then he'd come up, you'd find him coming over with a camera, covering just you, because he saw it. His idea was, he'd see everything, this guy, and he got as many shots as you can imagine in a movie. And he'd watch you, so you just keep working, and he'd find you.
Wow.
He's amazing, that guy.
Wow.
Really, that's something that not too many people know about him, because he works really quickly. So all of a sudden, put the camera right here, I want to get Paul right here, like doing this, what you were doing.
Wow.
And he'd just come over. It wasn't even in the script. I mean, so the idea of, like, as an actor, you should always be working. Don't be looking for someone to approve you. It's not mom and dad.
Mm.
It's you and the world, and you're an artist, and treat yourself as an artist.
And you are an artist.
Yeah, treat yourself as an artist.
Final words. Okay, final words. Whoa. What do you want to say to your fans?
I think that's our magic carpet. We've got to get on the magic carpet now.
What do you want to say to your fans?
Thank you for watching, fans. I mean, people who enjoy this work. The people who enjoy my work, really, you guys are really special because you really get it.
Well, we want to thank you for tuning in to Question Reality. And Paul's going to go question his reality after he leaves here. He's going to do something fun. Question Reality. We want to thank you for tuning in. And next week, we are going to have more cast members from Turnover. So tune in. Say goodbye to your fans right there, Paul.
Take care.
You're listening to Question Reality with Priscilla Leona, right here on LA Talk Radio.